This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. Running may reverse aging in certain ways that walking does not, according to a noteworthy new study of active older people. Here with more on this is Dr. Carol Sames. She's an exercise physiologist and associate professor in the College of Health Professions and the director of the Vitality Fitness Program at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Carol. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Linda.
So these findings for this study raise some very interesting questions about whether most of us need to pick up the pace of our workouts in order to gain the greatest benefit. Let's start with what this study was. Tell us what were they trying to find out?
Well, they wanted to look at older individuals. The mean age of these groups were 69 years old, and they wanted to compare individuals who ran at a very gentle pace and compare them to individuals who walked. And they wanted to look at this thing called walking economy. And economy is essentially, if we think about a car, we have cars that have different fuel efficiency economies. Some cars can go further at the same speed than other cars. And so they wanted to look at these individuals when they walked to see if there was a difference in the amount of energy one group used over the other.
Now, why is that so important? I mean, obviously, as we age, we want to be active. So walking, what role does walking play in our lives in general in terms of fitness or in terms of overall
health? Just overall health, absolutely. In fact, sometimes walking speed has been called the sixth vital sign. It's that important. We know that as individuals lose the ability to walk, slow down their pace, they have an increased risk of death from cardiovascular disease, diabetes, hypertension. So it's really all rolled together. So walking speed, walking economy is actually very important, especially as we get older.
But we do know that walking in general is excellent exercise.
Oh, very much so. It's movement, absolutely.
And the fact is that people who do walk throughout their lives and continue to walk for exercise also benefit. I mean, there have been studies that have shown that there's a lower incidence of obesity, arthritis, heart disease, diabetes, mm-hmm. much as you said, and longer lifespans than people who are sedentary.
Absolutely.
But this study was looking at something very particular, as you said, whether if a person ran versus walked at a certain age, if they could walk better
correctly
than the people who just walked.
Right, because what we know is that as we get older, regardless of how active we are, if you're just walking, people tend to lose their walking efficiency or their economy. And so they wanted to know, is this just something that is just age-related? Because we certainly know as we get older, we lose muscle mass. There are certain things that are, unfortunately, age-inevitable. So they wanted to know if this loss of walking economy was age-inevitable. And they had some surprising results.
So who did the study, and where did it take place, and how did they go about this?
Well, this was out of Boulder, Colorado, which is actually a very active area
of the country.
So they had 15 individuals who were regular walkers. They had been walking at least for 6 months, 30 minutes at least three times a week, and then they had 15 runners who also had been running for a minimum of 6 months, three times a week, 30 minutes at a shot.
So the pace of running wasn't that crucial, but the
No.
fact that they were runners as opposed to walkers.
Right. And they weren't racers. They were running at a slow pace. So they weren't, you know, we would call them joggers.
Yeah, right. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on air. I'm Linda Cohen here with exercise physiologist Dr. Carol Sames. And we're talking about the benefits of running rather than walking as we age. So what did they do? What was the study? What did they actually do?
Okay, so they took these 30 individuals and they put them on a treadmill. And they had three different walking speeds. One a slow walking speed, one more of a moderate speed, and one a quicker speed. And they looked essentially at their oxygen consumption to look at the amount of energy it took to walk at those three paces.
Hence the efficiency idea.
Exactly. And then they also looked at the mechanics, how much force they were placing on their legs, their stride length, how many strides they were taking at each one of these paces. And then they compared the runner group to the walking group. And essentially what they found, regardless of walking speed, the runners were more efficient. They used 7 to 10% less energy to walk at those three paces than the walkers did.
So what's the takeaway from that?
Well, the takeaway is that these individuals then would be able to do more activity. The runners were able to you know, essentially using less energy means that you could go longer, that you could perform more work. And if I'm not able to perform work, then I tend to be less active. So if you think about it, it's a tremendous improvement to have less energy, which means I can do more activities. I can be more active around the house, maybe occupationally. I can play with my grandchildren for a longer period of time. So really the ramifications are a lot larger than just, oh, I can walk a few minutes longer.
Did they also compare the older runners' walking efficiency to that of young people?
Yes, they did. And so they looked at a previous study, not this particular study, but they had also investigated college-age students. And they looked and found that these runners were as efficient as sedentary college students.
Wow.
And that was pretty impressive. The walkers were 26% less efficient when compared to those sedentary college students.
So can you take away from this then that if they continue to run, that they were actually that they didn't experience that, as you said, the inevitable
right
effects.
Decline. Mm-hmm. Correct. And so that's really the take-home message. And what these investigators said is, as with all research, there are limitations. You know, all studies have limitations. The sample size was small. There was a difference in the number of men and women in each group. But beyond that, what they're saying is similar to what we're seeing in other research that talks about interval training, that if you can move a little quicker, so if I am a walker, can I speed up, slow down? Can I, if I'm on a treadmill, increase the grade, walk up a hill? Because what they're thinking is that there's something that is going on at the muscle level.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about. What was their analysis in terms of the causation of this? I mean, what did they think was underlying it?
So they didn't actually test for that, but some of the theories are, and we know with more intense interval training, there's an increase in the number of mitochondria that we have, and mitochondria are our energy cells. So if I have more mitochondria, that means I can produce more energy, okay? So that's one theory. The other one, which is probably pretty strong, is that when you run, it requires a lot of coordination. So does walking, but running a little bit more so because you're moving at a quicker speed. And so they were thinking that the runners have better muscle activation and that they are, when they walk, the muscles that are utilized are more efficient at contraction versus the walkers. So again, they didn't test that, but it was one of the underlying hypotheses and one of their suggestions for future research.
Yeah, one of the things that strikes me, though, is when you look at a small sample like this, you had a self-selected group.
Absolutely.
Of people who already were runners.
Right.
So that could skew your results. If right. You were already picking people who, by nature, wanted to run, maybe they were a different category of person.
Absolutely.
In terms of their overall fitness level, in terms of their history, in terms of their overall health,
mm-hmm.
than the so-called walkers.
Walkers, right.
What's your thinking about how that may have skewed the
results? Oh, absolutely. And that's why I always say, you know, research is good. We need to have a foundation, but research needs to be replicated. And that's why we always have limitations to all research and suggestions for future research. You don't know. The runners might be running because they just were more efficient. You know,
always.
Just naturally,
yeah.
More efficient.
And found that, and maybe had run for their whole lives.
Right, exactly.
Which also sets them apart. I mean, when they screened for who their random sample was, did they screen for their history, for example, on how long they'd been running?
Well, you know, because there's really not randomization here. It's all volunteers.
Right.
You know, you're not randomizing to a running group and a walking group. Like you mentioned, they're already running and walking. What was also kind of interesting, though, you would think that you might find a difference in the biomechanics of the two groups when they walked, and actually there was no difference in biomechanics. So there was no difference in stride frequency, you know, how many steps I was taking, how long I'm on one step before I start to move forward. So there were no differences there. So that's kind of interesting because you would tend to think that maybe there would be a difference in the biomechanics. But
in what direction?
That the runners maybe would be more efficient. They would have a longer stride, a faster frequency, because obviously jogging is quicker than walking. But when the runners walked, there was no difference between those
two
groups.
So what's the bottom line here? I guess the question is it the kind of thing where, based on a small study like this, you as a professional would encourage people who maybe have been active, older adults who walk primarily, would you encourage them to start running, for example?
Probably what I would encourage is some little intervals first. You know, running is not for everyone. There's risk involved with running. There actually is more force when you land running versus walking.
And if you have issues with arthritis or osteoporosis or what have you, you could probably
potentially injure yourself.
Injure yourself, right.
So with the walkers, what I would say is if you're able to, it'd be great to add some intervals. I walk a little quicker, I slow down. I walk up a hill, because that acts like intensity. And this research really corroborates the research that's coming out now on interval training and how you really can get more bang for your buck from a cardiovascular standpoint. So, and the authors also suggest that it might not just be running. Maybe if I ride my bike, I ride a little quicker, or I'm on a recumbent, a stationary bike, I ride a little quicker, and then I back off, and then I ride a little quicker. You know, they even suggest it could possibly transfer over to swimming if people swim, or use the elliptical or other pieces of exercise equipment, that there are some benefits to this idea of interval training if an individual is able to do that type of training.
So the concept with interval training, though, and I think you and I have talked about this before, is the idea that you're stressing the system a little bit more and then allowing for recovery.
Correct.
So
yes.
So it's not really just a long, steady slog, but the idea of kind of speeding up, slowing down, speeding up, slowing down. And would you say that from your standpoint as a professional looking at all of this, that that really is kind of the crucial takeaway?
It certainly is. Again, we want people to be active. And so I don't want people to think that, I'm going to ditch the walking program because there are many benefits. But if you want to have additive benefits, interval training certainly for the right individual can be very beneficial.
How about adding things like weight to that? In other words, weight training as part of it.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, in the Vitality program, one of the things that we really try to stress is the importance of strength. In fact, I would place strength training initially. If you had somebody that was completely deconditioned, older, I would actually aim for strength training first and then gradually add in more aerobic or cardiovascular activity. You need muscle to move. And if you don't have that muscle, it really doesn't matter if you want to walk or jog, because if you don't have the muscle to be able to perform those activities, and just think about activities of daily living, just living in my house. I mean, you need to have muscle to do all those activities.
So in the very little bit of time we have left, what are the kinds of things people can do to work on strength training? I know there's a world of it.
Well, you don't even need any equipment. You can do things like wall sits, which I believe we had discussed, where I'm up against a wall and I slightly bend down with a nice straight back. Sit to stands, sitting up out of a chair without using my arms. You can do wall push-ups. I mean, there are all kinds of things that you can do to maintain strength. We can do sit-ups in a chair. So it's really important to have that strength, because that strength then enables me to be able to move. So.
And in some sense, that's what really generates longevity.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Carol. Once again, it's always so inspiring to hear you. My guest has been Dr. Carol Sames, exercise physiologist and director of the Vitality Fitness Program at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.